This is under list views, and there we go. Cool. So each of these squares is an implementation or an instantiation of that item template that we talked about. It's bound the image URL from our data source to the image tag so that it will show the image, and it's also bound the text, the name from our data source to that div so that we can see the image and we can see the div.
So even though you showed us the object had other properties in it, like description and stuff, we could just selectively choose which things we want to bind to in
exactly.
that list view. Oh, that's cool.
Yep, so we have chosen the name and the URL, and we didn't choose to show the location, but we definitely could have.
Okay.
And actually, in the next example, I'm going to show you that we're going to use the category as well.
Awesome.
So in the next example, let's look at that one first. Now notice, as I use my mouse wheel here, I have limited the width of this list view control.
You did?
In some cases, that's not what you want to do for UI. Oftentimes, you want your list view to take up your whole pane, and you're going to swipe, and the entire screen is going to move. But right now, it's kind of running inside of a div, and so it still works. But notice the behavior. When move my wheel, that list view pans until I get to the end of it, and then the entire screen starts to pan. So that's an interesting and pretty good behavior. Now, in the next list view, this one is grouped, and this grouped list view is the same data. It's the same data, but it is grouped.
I see that.
we must be nearing the end of the day.
Yeah.
So this one has group. This one has group headers over each of these sections. So we've got the coastline, the flora, the other. And it's automatically put the... I didn't have to figure out where those went. It's automatically put those in the right place for me. Okay?
Wow.
Now let's look at how that one works. It's really not much more complicated than the simple one. In the simple one, we were using the attraction data. We still are. But now, instead of just creating a simple list by making a binding list and setting it to the attractions, or passing in the attractions array to instantiate it, we're actually doing that and then calling the create grouped function. The create grouped function expects two functions. These are essentially lambda functions. The first one is the grouped list saying, how do I determine what a group identifier is? And I say, well, it's the category. That's the group identifier. And then it says, how do I determine what a group is, like the object that is going to be the data source for what shows up in the header.
Right.
And I say, that's the same thing. It's just a category.
So it could have been that the group, in your example, the categories could have been numeric, and then you could have actually displayed a text. But in this case, they just happen to be unique in themselves, and it just worked.
Yep. It could have been that it was a category key for there, and it could have been that this was category name.
Gotcha.
Or we could even have had this be an object where the name was something. We could do anything that we want in there.
That's very
because
cool.
We're developers.
True.
Okay, so we now have a grouped data source that we can use for our list, and we have to set the data source of our group data source for our list to that. So it's the grouped list dot groups dot data source. All right.
You also had to do the previous two lines. You also set the item data source.
Yep.
So one to the data source that we kind of normally did, and then the other one has to be specifically to groups.datasource.
Exactly.
Okay.
And we also have to set not only the item template, but the header template. This is for each group.
Oh.
Okay, so in this one we've specified two templates. Let's go look at that HTML.
Yeah, let's see that.
In the group section then, we have not one template like before, but another as well. And this one is simply a div looking for a name. And that's interesting, because I'm not sure why that works. I'm looking for a name. But it did work, didn't it? You saw it.
It did work.
Anyway, it works. Okay, so that's got me confused. All right, but it works. Let's go look at the grouped one again, and you can see that it has used the grouped category name for each of these. So coastline, for instance, and put all of the coastline in there. Now, once you have a grouped data source like this, then you can implement a semantic zoom on this. And that would be a really good idea for here. I could scroll out semantically, you know, by pinching or using control wheel, and I would see coastline, flora, waterfall. And I might want to have an image that represents those groups. So now the user is able to either browse all the items or zoom out and see all of them.
I like that.
All right, there's one more thing I want to show for list views, and that is not in the list views demo. It's in the hero images demo. This is the hero images. Now, there's something pretty cool about this one.
Wait a minute. I thought we were talking about list view.
Yeah, we are.
Oh.
We are. It doesn't look like a list view because we don't necessarily have symmetric grid items, tiles, does it?
Wow. Yeah. This,
this is a huge one. But you can prove that it's a list view by selecting some of these. So that's pretty nifty. Now, I'll show you the way this is done. Mm-hmm. It's not that difficult, actually. Let's go to, let's close all files. Let's go back to our search here, and let's look for hero. And it's going to find hero images, CSS, HTML, and JavaScript. Let's go look at the HTML, and you can see that we have just a simple list view. That's it. I don't even have any options in there.
What?
We're doing it all imperatively. And then here's the template. I've got to have a template. Okay. Now, this template, remember that in my binding statement, I get to say, I want the source of this image to be some property. In this case, it's called URL, right?
Mm-hmm.
I also, remember yesterday when you were teaching us in CSS that I could set the class name?
Yes.
And that would actually set what the class is for that element?
Wow.
I can use that property. So I can set the class name to one of these data properties.
Yeah, it's good that you're showing it that way because I think some might be thinking they would just use the word class there.
Right.
Because that's what they would normally see in the element, but it's good a reminder that you need to use class name.
Yeah, it actually uses the JavaScript, the object version of all of the naming.
That's excellent.
Now, that is going to be dependent on, the class is going to be dependent on the type then, so let's go look at the CSS and see that we have multiple types here. We have square, which is 180 by 180, tall, which is double tall, 180 by 370. Is that double?
Pretty close.
Quick math lesson here. It's pretty close to double. It's not quite.
Right.
There's an extra 10 in there, right?
Yeah.
That extra 10 is that 10 pixel margin in between the items. Same thing with width. Double wide, and then big square is double wide and double tall.
True.
It's like the big and tall store.
So you're saying that you're binding to one of those class names, and that's kind of what helps us to know what the dimensions are going to be.
Yeah.
That's pretty clever.
Yeah, absolutely. So now let's go look at our data. What else are we doing here? We're also setting the size of our list view and giving ourselves that classic Windows 8 design 120 pixel left margin. Mm-hmm. But let's look at our JavaScript. In our JavaScript, we have a number of images. And those images I've determined are going to be of type big square, 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 tall, square, wide, square, square.
Right.
And you could, I'm just explicitly using this data, but you could get that from any, by any means that you want.
Oh, sure.
You could, for instance, have a list of store products, and one of your properties of your store products is whether or not you want it to be featured. And so you might look into that store product and see if it's a featured item and use that to determine that it should be larger than the other tiles. So then I go ahead and set it. Now, this is interesting. Notice the way that I'm finding my list view. I didn't give my list view a name or a class or anything like that. I'm looking for it with its attribute selector. In other words, I'm just saying, show me a div control that has the data win control of list WinJS UI list view. That's how I found it.
And that's a good example coming from yesterday of when you would want to put that in quotes on the inside because it was nested in a string.
Yeah, absolutely. So I get the win control version of that. This is looking familiar. I build myself a WinJS binding list with this list of images in it, and I set the data source to my item data source. I again set its template, just like we did before. And then, here's the magic.
Okay.
For that list view, I need to turn on this group info. I need to set it to a function. It's expecting a function. Hmm. I need to set the layout's group info to this function. And this function needs to return that enable cell spanning is true. Hmm. The cell width is 180 and the cell height is 180. That means that that is the smallest square. And I'm promising the framework that I'm going to provide it with images that are either that size or increments of that size, including the margin.
Cool.
Okay? So that's why if I say 180, 180, then I can use 180, 180, I can double it, in by width or by height or both, but I have to stick to those increments, okay?
That's cool.
All right, and that becomes hero images.
That's great.
It's still a list view. It's still dynamic. You can still programmatically determine that you want to blow up one of your images. You do have to make sure that the way that this is laid out, for instance, that's the first item, mm-hmm. that's the second item, third, fourth. So you have to make sure that they fit correctly. If, for instance, after this fourth item, mm-hmm. I tried to do another tall item,
right.
those wouldn't fit on that row, and so it would render next to it and leave a gap.
I see.
So if you want these to fit like a puzzle,
right.
then you might have to do a little bit of JavaScript math to make sure that the next one that you add is going to fit.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Those are hero images. And that's the list view. You're going to use the list view a lot in your apps.
Absolutely. Like I said, it's probably my favorite control in terms of, especially when you're dealing with all sorts of list of data and, of course, with the filtering and things that you brought in from how we can filter data in the back and how we're going to even receive the data, which we'll get into at some point when it's not coming right from typed inside. We have some options here to really do some amazing different features with that list view. I'm just really happy that we have that. Very cool. Well, I think I'd like to show something that I would eventually like to use the hero images and graft it in with this next demo. What I want to do is actually show another control that can be used, and it has to deal with taking the... it would be about taking a list of data, but then using that list of data and only seeing one piece of it at a time. So I use something not as quite as exciting as the images that Jeremy was using, but I still think it's really nice for you to see the essence of what we were talking about earlier with design. Less is more, and there is a way for you to actually have sweeping one thing at a time on a screen using the barely enough navigation hints and still get that nice immersive experience. So we're going to do that with a control that's called the flip view. So I've had this flippin' folder here and a page called flippin', and now I'm going to do what I would call the flippin' demo. So, I was hoping that'd get something. Okay, so much like what Jeremy showed a little earlier, this control also benefits from having a template. Now, I've already put the template on the screen, but I haven't put the control on the screen as of yet. I'm going to do that now through amazing fast typing. Shazam!
Well, that was fast.
That was fast. So, what did I just do? What I just did is I dragged on this content from the toolbar, which you can use the toolbar as a way to kind of just throw some stuff up there and reuse it for later. And I gave it an ID of flippin' view, and then I gave the data win control name, so this needs to be exact. But what I did differently than what you did with the list view is I actually set the item data source to the flip view declaratively.
Wow, that's, same thing, just a different way to do it.
Just a different way to do it. So apparently somewhere I have this demoapp.datalist.datasource. I wonder what data type this thing is right here. Would you have any guesses?
I guess it's data type of banana.
So close, binding list.
Oh.
Then I also indicate the item template. The item template, which is what is up here, or what I've created up here, which goes to show you, as you're right, it could be somewhere else on the screen. This template is a WinJS binding template, much like the one that you were showing earlier. I have a div. Now, with the flip view control, you must only have one, and only one of these are allowed as a single child of this template. And then if you want multiple children inside of it, then you just do this. And so in this example, I have a header one tag. I'm setting the inner text of it to a property called title. And I also have a div that has a binding to its inner text, and we're going to put in some content. So somewhere in this project, I have objects that have a title property and a content property. And they're going to show up in the flip view, and they're going to be using that template. So we've seen a degree of it. Now I'm going to go into the JavaScript, and you could start to see where the data is coming from. Much like what you did, I hard-coded this data. I'm using the whole lorem and all the useless data to fill the screen. So it's just that. It's just the first word of each one of these paragraphs is what I'm using as the title. And then down below, I take that array of data, and sure enough, I'm doing the same thing you were doing with the WinJS binding list. I'm applying that array into that list, and then I'm calling this WinJS namespace.define so that I can say, hey, I want to be able to access this from outside in that declarative statement. So I need to say, here's the public way to address it. I'll go create a demo app namespace, and then I'll be naming the list, which was called the list inside of here. Now outside, it's going to be known as data list. And that's what I did when I came over here, is I used the word data list and then went to its data source. Still have access to the underlying content and object. It's just named differently on the outside. Well, is there anything else that I needed to do to get that working? This portion, or this function here that was created in this JavaScript, was there just for the benefit of showing that that's where the data was coming from. But as far as making the control work, since I used these declarative options, it should just work just by running it. So I'm going to go ahead and run it now. I'm going to go click on the flipping button. And now I have and this is where we can start to see, and I love what even just happened. I don't know if those who are watching saw what was on the screen initially, but watch what's going to happen when I move my mouse around. Oh, there it is again. Now if I just stop for a second.
So does it know that you're using a mouse?
It knows that I'm active right now over this particular content. And notice it's only showing me one thing, but it's egging me on. It's like, click here. Or if I could swipe, that would work as well. Now I got directions. I can go back. I can go forward. So what this is doing, and this is why I think it'd be more attractive with your other list view example, is I can have all your descriptions and pictures and stuff, and I could just pan through each one at a time, like I'm going through a slideshow of each one of these. If you want to implement this, I mean, my goodness, that was really simple in terms of the declarative nature. The flip view actually allows you to, with very, very little work, get this nice little suggestion on each side to say, hey, let's scroll forward or backward. Very cool. I like it.
I do too.
Now, the other thing that you could do, if you wanted to, is you can put properties on the flip view so that instead of taking up the full screen like it did, what I could do is I can actually give it dimensions, and then the flip view is only within the scope of those those dimensions. So you could use it that way if you want to. Might make sense to do in some scenarios, but in most cases where I've seen it used, it's usually been a full screen setting. I absolutely like that control a lot. I think there's one thing I want to show you more in the code so you can see how it was actually formatted on the inside, and that's going to be by going over in the code to the CSS file for, it's the flipping CSS file. So I'll go in there and just show that I use the column feature that we talked about yesterday so that if the user or if the, instead of just showing all that text just all over the place, I created that nice two-column look, and I was able to create that header tag kind of sitting in the background. I applied just a 20% opacity, and it just kind of sat in that background, and I made the font size extra large so you can kind of get that feel like, okay, that word's going to kind of be dominant and hiding in the background. So this was all CSS magic that made that work. All right. Well, let's see. We've talked about some of the WinJS controls, especially the ones that can be used within the application. I think it's now time to talk about another very important one, and that's the app bar.
All right. Let's talk about the app bar then. Again, the code is in Code Show, so you should be able to follow along on this one. There are two examples of the app bar, and they're not combined because it's logistically difficult, of course, to put two different app bars in one screen. So they're separate, and one of them is going to show you how to use the app bar declaratively. That means in the HTML markup, and the other one is going to show you how to do the app bar imperatively, so that you have some more programmatic control over it. So just a word on when you would want to choose which. If you have an app that's a pretty small-scale app, maybe you've got one screen or two, and your app bar buttons don't change that much. You've got, you know, three or four app bar buttons, and they're either the same always or pretty much the same always, then you might want to just use the declarative approach. Just drop an app bar in the HTML. You can still manipulate it from behind the scenes with the JavaScript, but if you don't need to change it that much, that might be a perfectly good scenario for you. But if you have a pretty complicated app that has different app bars on every screen with buttons that may or may not show up, and programmatically you want to add buttons to the app bar, then you might need to use something like a more imperative approach where you're interfacing with the app bar. Now, in the Ocho.js on CodeShow, you can see that there's one implementation of working with an app bar imperatively. This is the way that I did it, and the way that I chose to do it is you have a set command where you get to define your app bar, and by default it replaces what was there anyway. And so on every page, you reset what you want your look and behavior of your app bar to be. So we'll look at that one second. First, we're going to look at the declarative app bar. When I go to the declarative app bar, the definition has been done here. And I can hit Win Z, and I can bring up that app bar. So you should be able to see that app bar at the bottom of my screen. Now, by default, in the UI light theme, that app bar is the same color as my background. So I kind of like that. It looks like it just brought up buttons for me. Mm-hmm. But you could obviously change the color of that app bar so that it had more more contrast. And each of those buttons that shows up on the app bar is obviously going to have a click event that may just have an effect in my app, or it may bring up some more UI, like a little flyout or something. So let's go look at that one. I'm going to look at the app bar 2, that's the declarative one. So I'll open those. And let's look at the appbar2.html. So here we are on the HTML for the declarative one. And you can see that on this page, I'm specifying a div with the data win control of WinJS UI app bar. That's what makes it an app bar. Now, Windows automatically knows that if there's an app bar control, it doesn't matter where you declare this, because it says I'm going to put that on the bottom of the screen and treat it like an app bar. Okay? So you don't have to worry about its position or anything. We haven't set any data win options here, but we certainly could. But we've declared a number of buttons on that app bar declaratively. And in fact, we've even declared an HR. This is, if you're a web developer, you know that an HR is a horizontal rule.
Yeah.
And we've always had horizontal rules, and they always behave the way that browsers translate them to behave. But in this case, we're using this as a little vertical separator. So once again, Microsoft has kind of jumped on board with the standards and said, HR is a separator, so let's use it as a separator. But in this case, it's a separator that is an app bar command that is of type separator. So we've got to flesh this out a bit. Okay. But these are a good idea, to use some separators to make your app bar buttons work the way they should. Now, on our app bar, we have a number of buttons. These buttons are app bar commands, and they have a bunch of options. So these are all the options that are set for the first button. The first option is an ID, which is important because we're going to need to be able to refer to this button to, for instance, make it visible or invisible, or tie up a click handler or anything like that. So for this one, it's the add button. We'll call it command add. We'll give it a label. This is what shows up in the UI. We'll give it an icon. Now, icons are the easiest way to refer to an icon is by name. There are a whole bunch of built-in Windows icons. If you refer to them by name, then it just selects that icon. There are articles online you can look up, and it'll show you how to make your own icons and use those programmatically. Mm-hmm. But if there's a built-in icon, it's recommended that you use that. This one is also saying that it wants for the section for this to be global. So it doesn't matter that this one was declared first. That doesn't mean that it's going to automatically be on the very far left-hand side of the app bar. Mm. It was declared first, but it was also declared to be in the global section, meaning that it's going to go over to the right side of the app bar. And finally, there's a tooltip. So we've defined a number of buttons here. And on one of them, the second one, this is the one with the label of remove, we've actually added an on-click handler.
Interesting.
Declaratively.
Interesting. Yeah.
We're trying to call app bar 2 remove. Okay? Let's see how that works. Let's jump back to the page, and let's click on the remove, and we get a standard Windows dialog saying, okay, I'm removing. Doesn't actually remove anything, just a dialog. But there we go, we removed. Now, how did that work? We actually are tying up this on-click event. It's declarative, but as you saw from Michael's presentation, from your HTML, if you're going to refer to something, it had better be available to you in that namespace. Mm-hmm. So let's go look on our JavaScript and see how that's made available to us. Mm. It's been made available to us by way of this namespace feature in WinJS that allows us to define a namespace. In this case, we're giving it the same name as our page. This is appbar2. So I'm saying that I want a namespace called appbar2, and I want a property on that that is called remove. Now, this remove is going to be a function so that I can call it from here. But if I want to call a function from my HTML as I am here, then in order to keep it safe, the framework requires that I turn on a certain attribute of that function to mark it for processing. Hmm. So I have to say WinJS utilities mark supported for processing and wrap my function in that. And if I do that, then I'm free to use that function from my HTML. Otherwise, it's going to throw an exception.
Oh.
So that function simply says, open a message dialog that says remove, and then show it asynchronously.
Cool.
Okay, so that's how we do that with an existing. Now, that's the declarative way to add a click event to that declaratively defined app bar button.
Sure.
But I can also do it imperatively by referring to it by its ID. So remember that this one has the on click on it, but this add doesn't have any on click on it whatsoever. But I have given it a command ID. So now I can go, for instance, to my code behind and say, I want to grab my app bar. I can grab my app bar this way. And for my app bar, I want to get command by ID. Here's its ID. Now I have it. Now I can set an on click for that command. And this one doesn't require that I do it marked for processing because I'm doing it in the JavaScript.
Gotcha.
Okay. Now, one more way to do app bar, and that is with the imperative approach. Again, the imperative approach is better whenever you might change your buttons a lot, or might change your app bar a lot. So let me show you the HTML for this. Oh, wait a minute. There is no HTML for this. You don't have to put anything in your HTML to do it with this method. Nothing whatsoever. So you don't have to define an app bar. You just go to your JavaScript, and you say, you use the set command. Now, calling the set command, and I even have a note in there, without passing anything in there, effectively clears your app bar. So if there was a previous app bar, it clears it out. And if I want to do a basic app bar, then I can, for instance, call ocho.appbar.set, and I pass it in an object. This is some options. How do I want to set it? And one of those options, the most important one, is the buttons. This is the buttons that show up on the app bar. Buttons is an array, because I may have multiple buttons. Mm-hmm. And for each individual item in that array, I can specify just a little bit of data. This is actually no data whatsoever. Or I can specify a whole bunch of data. Okay? So I can create a button by just throwing in an object, and it's going to use all of the defaults for it, as you'll see in a second. Or I can go ahead and set the label, set the icon, and look here, I can automatically set the click event right there. So this is a little bit of a fancier way to set up an app bar with four buttons, the first of which doesn't have anything set on it, so we'll have to see how that one looks. Mm-hmm. And then the other three have click events that simply pop up message dialog boxes that say what they do. Add, delete, cancel. Okay?
Cool.
Let's go see how that one works. Now for this app bar demo, this is the imperative one, I've actually given a little bit of a UI so we can see some of the behaviors of this. I can show the app bar, but it doesn't show because I'm on none. So I can hit basic buttons, and now I show the app bar, and there it is. Hmm. Notice how that first button was rendered. We didn't give it any name whatsoever. We didn't give it a label. We didn't tell it what icon it wanted to be,
right. But
I just defaulted all of those. So it uses the X, it calls it button 0, and it does nothing when you click it. But it's there, and it's ready for us to flesh that out. It's a great way to kind of mock up some app bar buttons real quick. Now, if I click anywhere inside my app, this app bar by default is lightly dismissible. So I click and it goes away. And in fact, it kind of captures that click. So let's show that again. Let me try to click this button, this checkbox, and it doesn't check it because that click was spent dismissing my app bar. Okay? But I can make the app bar sticky, and you can see the code for that process by checking that. Now I show the app bar. Now I click out of it, and that app bar is there to stay. Okay? I can also programmatically hide the app bar. So I can either let the user swipe it up manually, or I can have full control as the developer, and I can decide when exactly I want that app bar to show or hide. Lots of control over the app bar for you as the developer. Just remember to implement it so that it delights the user.
Very good. It's awesome.
Well, what do we think of our controls section? You feel like we're done?
Oh, there's one more topic we got to squeeze in here.
Let's do it.
It's important. And in fact, we need to snap it in and make it snappy. And it's all about... See? View states. So, you know, we have these various ways that our applications can show. So these are the following view states. Let's go ahead and address the question or the challenge that we had earlier. Could an application, in fact, not support Snap View? What did we conclude was the answer to that?
Should we do a poll? We should have done a poll.
We
huh?
should have. It's probably too late now.
But. Are they quick to start? No. Okay.
No. Okay.
That's all right.
Yeah. So
we'll just tell you the results.
Yeah. Well, the results are is basically your application can be put into a Snap View. In the example of like the Windows Store, the store app, when it's put into a Snap View, it just sits there and kind of has a logo and doesn't really do anything.
Yeah, let's take a look at it. Why don't we switch over to my screen? I'm going to open the store, and then I'm going to go back to my Windows screen, and I'm going to open, for instance, the maps. And then I'm going to come from the left. I'm going to bring back the store, and I'm going to snap that to the side. And notice what the store has decided for its Snap View. It's decided to not do anything. Yeah. So in this sense, Michael was right.
Yeah.
An app can decide to do nothing.
Right. However, in this sense, Jeremy was also right in that it was still snapped.
Yeah, it is still snapped. So let's look at what you see in the Package AppX manifest very quickly. You can determine that your app supports landscape, portrait, landscape flip, portrait flipped, or any of those combinations, but you can't determine that it won't take snap. It will snap.
Right. All right, well, let's switch back over to my screen, where we're going to focus on different ways in your CSS that you can respond to view state changes. So if you're not familiar with media queries, and in fact, it's usually in almost all the starting templates for Visual Studio, these are ways for you to go in and respond specifically to any one of these states. So you can see the vendor prefix here, because it is, at this time, of course, it's just specific to a Windows 8 experience. But we can respond to it being filled. The default is usually a full screen landscape. If it was switched into portrait and, of course, snapped. The two that are kind of related to each other are filled and snapped, because if one thing is snapped, then whatever fills the rest of it would be your filled content. I'd like to go ahead and go into the Code Show project, so I'll right here, and I'm going to execute it right now and go over to the View States tile and click on it. And what I'm doing is I stole from you all these nice images, and I thought I'll use it in my example. And what I wanted to demonstrate was what would happen if we switch from one view state to another. Now, I've named this title up here Full Screen Landscape, because I know that's how it's going to start. Now, I'm going to switch it over into Snap View. I could do that by grabbing it at the top and putting it over here, or I can use the Windows key dot. So Windows key dot will toggle. But the problem is, man, it's not looking very good, you know? Something's wrong. I mean, it still says full screen landscape. You know, I look at this tiny.
Everything falls off the side.
I can barely see it, but look how tiny this little scroll bar is. Is that going to be of any benefit to me? I don't think so. So I'm going to now suggest that I make a dramatic change to that. One of those changes that I can make is going to be by going into the CSS for this. Oh, maybe if I uncomment this code, that might help. So Control K U, and I will bring that up. So what this is doing is it's saying, hey, you know what? If we ever go into Snap View, we better change the margin and the height of our list. So that's one thing I could do for that particular snap. But the other thing that you could do is respond programmatically to view state. So you have an update layout. You know, you were talking about ready events.
Yeah.
There's also an update layout. And in there, I get these three different arguments that are passed in. And I'm going to change my page title. So it's going to say that the view state name is whatever the current view state is. Now, that is a little helper function that I created up here that just returns based on these enumerated values, 0, 1, 2, or 3, whether it's full screen, filled, snapped, or portrait. When I go back down here, I'm also going to introduce this code, which says, hey, if we're in Snap View, let's change our list view's layout to list, not grid. That means everything will go down vertically instead of across. I think this is going to demo so much nicer now that I've added these things. So I'll go right back over to View States, click on it. There we go. Let me go into Snap View. Oh, now see, to me, that's nicer. I'm now scrolling up and down. It says snapped at the top. That's kind of nice. I can bring up, another app, let's say like the weather app, and demonstrate what this would look like if I'm in the filled mode. So it now switches to filled. So it gives me this opportunity to not only respond to it in the media query, but I can also respond to it programmatically and even change content or layout positions. Again, if I put this back into a snap view, I just change the list view to now go vertically just with one simple line that says, hey, your layout's going to be list instead. So really cool stuff. And I will eventually make it back to our presentation. And resume. So, in summary, we've talked about the controls, we've done the app bar, and we have handled the view state changes. This has been, we're having too much fun.
Yeah, I think
it's got to come to an end at some point.
I think we filled out our allotted time for this module.
I think we did. So, you enjoy your next break, and we'll see you soon.